Get started here. Okay, well, we'll begin the meeting here. I would first of all like to welcome everyone to March meeting of the Game Fish and Parks, and we are meeting here in Pier today at the Red Rosa for anyone that's out there listening on the radio. So if you would want to come down, we'll be meeting this afternoon and tomorrow morning. So anybody that wishes to attend the meeting, we would certainly encourage that. Today is a great day for all the members of the commission here and the Game Fish and Parks, because today we have one of our own back, and it's been a long battle for Kathy, and we're so happy to have her here at the table with us again today. And Kathy, we just want to wish you the very best. It's so good to see you back. And we have cupcakes to celebrate this momentous occasion. So welcome back. It's good to have you back with us. You've always been with us in spirit, if not present. Yeah. So would you have a comment?
Yeah, I do. Now that I'm here, I feel like I was never gone. And I just want to thank you all for your prayers and strength and love that you shared with me, because it always came just when I needed another thought or another boost to get me through. And it's been a process, but we're getting through it, and we're through the transplant time and feeling better every day, and through the love and support of all you guys and our family. And I see my son, Representative Kent Peterson, just popped in. So, and he and our children and my husband were there by my side. My cousin, Father Ron Gary, out by the door from Fort Pier here, too, has all along the way been there for me. So I'm so glad to be back. This is the best medicine in the world, and I look forward to being back for many more yet. Thank you, everybody.
Great, great. I know the process isn't over yet and still have a ways to go, but we're very happy to have you here today and hope you're here every meeting now after.
Thank you, Gary.
And we wish you well as you continue to battle cancer. It's everywhere anymore, it seems like. Okay, with that, one thing I have at the top of my agenda here is the Bow Hunters are hosting a hospitality tonight. Bob, would you have comment on that?
My name is Bob Bargan, and I represent the South Dakota Bow Hunters Incorporated. And this evening we are happy to host.
Tonight we are happy to host our annual hospitality night and wild game dinner for the commission and the staff. And we'll be holding it right across the parking lot over at the Governor's Inn. We will have drinks available at 5:30 and dinner served at 6. The menu is gourmet whitetail meatloaf, mashed potatoes, cheesy green beans, homemade bread, apple pie, cherry pie with homemade whipped topping. And the lady preparing it is Laura Anderson from the Pure Bliss Bakery and Cafe, and any of you who have been to her establishment can attest to the fact that the name is very appropriate for the food that she serves. So we're very excited to have, we're anxious to have you all there come, and I noticed that there's a bit of a snowbank between here and and the Governor's Inn, and I'll go out here in a little bit and try and make a path for you to come through. So hope to see you all at 5:30 and 6.
Okay, thank you, Bob. I'm sure we'll find a way around the snowbank. So With that, we'll call the meeting to order, and first order of business here is always to talk about conflict of interest by the commission, and I will read a statement here, and then we will get our meeting underway. Now is the time for the commission to consider any written or verbal disclosures of conflicts of interest by current and former members. If any member of the commission has completed a written disclosure of a conflict of interest, the commission will consider the disclosure at this time. I've received none. If any commission member wishes to verbally disclose an interest in a contract, a direct benefit from a contract, or any other conflict with any matter on today's meeting agenda, please identify the contract or the other matter in which you have the conflict of interest and generally describe the nature of the conflict. Also, if during the meeting you become aware that you have a conflict of interest with any proposed contract or other matter, please notify the chair of the conflict and generally describe the nature of the conflict. If you disclose a conflict of interest, the commission must vote on whether the matter underlying the conflict is fair, reasonable, and not contrary to the public's interest. You may not participate in the commission's discussion and vote on the conflict. You remember that, Kathy?
Yes, I do.
Okay. All right, thank you. With that, I would call on Secretary Hepler with any opening remarks. Kelly?
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome, staff. And there's a lot of members of the public, so I'm happy to see everybody here. And for the members of the public, you know, we are on public radio, so when you come in, you'll be able to get a readout of this thing after you talk. And also, Kathy, it is a joy to have you back. And at least this side of the table raise our level up just a little bit. No offense, Commissioner Jensen. And also, Bob, when you talk about those treats, it's Lent, and that was my priest that just left here, so I'm sure you're just waving those temptations if you're blessed in front of me, because I gave up sugar for Lent, so that was pleasant. But I think one of the things we want to do is, I think, when did you want to hear about the legislative update? Do you want to do that now, Mr. Chairman?
I think so, yeah.
Let's do that later, and Director of Life, I think, is going to join us. Yeah, it's been a very busy schedule. The non-manned waters, that's something that Kevin Roblin will cover in his section. Yeah, I'm not sure when you want to do that, Kevin. That you could do it now or you could do it later. Well, I'll tell you what, Kevin, why don't we, let's do the non-manned waters when we, as you are on the agenda. You can cover that piece. I mean, that's fine. You know, it's typical. We got all sorts of advice. But why don't we walk through that, then Tony, for the commission, and then if there's any questions, we can deal with that. Then we can have Kevin do his thing a little later on.
Mm-hmm. Proceed.
Sounds good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those listening on the internet, Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division for the department. Good afternoon, commissioners. So glad to see you, Kathy. It's great to have you here. Want to run through what's been going on up at the Capitol. We've spent a fair amount of time, as you know, this time of year up there. Had a few things go well and maybe a couple that didn't less well, but in the end it's been a good session. We have a great effort between our parks team and Scott and Kevin and Secretary Hepler, and a lot of bills, a lot of discussions. In fact, there are, for every bill that's introduced, there's probably three or four that are discussed in the hallways that one way or another don't necessarily make it to the point of being an introduced bill. But you will probably recall that we had two department-sponsored bills. Those bills were 1046 and 1047. Both of those bills have passed and were signed by the governor. The first of those expanded landowner-owned land licenses to include landowners that have land in the Black Hills hunting unit. For deer hunting, as it stood before in statute, only those landowners that owned land for the West River and East River deer hunting seasons were allowed to purchase those landowner-owned land licenses. We had a few landowners in the Black Hills that were not able to draw their preferred license, and I think last year there were 24 of those. So this doesn't have a huge impact on license allocation, but it will extend that additional opportunity to those landowners that don't draw a license in the regular drawing to get one of those any deer licenses that's valid on their own property. It is either an any deer license or any deer plus an antlerless license. Those two license types are available to landowners at a half price of the normal fee. Also, House Bill 1047 placed into statute a redefined set of species that are fur bears. Two species were added. They are the river otter and the fisher. River otters right now are on our threatened list, and later this year we will be back in front of the commission discussing our threatened and endangered list. We've gone through a review process, taken public comment, and it's very possible that that river otter, which is doing quite well in many areas of the eastern part of the state, will be coming off that list. But I can't tell you that with certainty because the evaluation is not done yet. But should that happen, and should it be appropriate for some harvest to be allowed, the mechanisms are in place now in statute for that to happen, because it had to be defined as in some class of animals in our definitions section before it could be a potential season could be established. Again, I want to make clear we're not coming to you this year with a season for river otters. It's probably still a few years down the line, but as we were going through this discussion and lining things up for the day, if or when that is a possibility, that we're ready to go there. We had one other bill that we wasn't a department bill. It was something we had worked on and actually sought a sponsor to carry for us. Had to do with hunting mourning doves within 50 yards of a road. Right now, both sides of the fence, including the road right-of-way side and the private land side, within 50 yards of a road, are excluded from mourning dove hunting. It was a bill that we started with in the House. It passed unanimously out of the House committee, went on the consent calendar, which essentially means it's debated with a number of other pretty simple, straightforward bills, and they all get passed at once. Went over to the Senate, and we found a senator who had opposition to the bill. And it wasn't necessarily for what the bill was doing. It was a general opposition towards mourning dove hunting. And this is something that I remember reading about, even happened before. I worked for the department. Reestablishing that mourning dove season, there are some people that really, I guess, have a soft spot for mourning doves. In addition, this particular senator also raises homing pigeons, and he told stories of how important homing pigeons were to the soldiers in World War II, I believe it was. Was it World War I? How he still has these pigeons, and again, there's something very sentimental to that particular senator. He made a passionate speech on the Senate floor and swayed a number of voters or a number of senators to vote in opposition to the bill, so the bill failed. It wasn't the worst defeat in the world. I mean, it wasn't the worst thing in the world to lose this. I mean, we thought it was important to open up those areas of private land, allow landowners to allow hunting when and where they would like to. It's something we'll take up again, I'm sure, sometime in the future, but chalk that one up to a different experience, I guess, if you will, in the legislature. But that's where that the mourning dove bill ended up. There was another bill that we opposed that ended up passing, had to do with use of night vision equipment to hunt predators. There were safety concerns that we expressed. Some of the folks we deal with on some of the ag groups had some reservations, not to the point that they testified, but in the end, that statute was amended to allow individuals to get written permission from landowners to hunt at night with night vision equipment and certain calibers of rifles. With written permission from a landowner, I guess that'll come July 1st, folks will be able to use those calibers, 222, 22, 250, some of those smaller high-powered rifle calibers, along with a night vision scope to take predators, those animals classified as predator varmint. The main argument in advocacy for that bill was landowners have problems with predators on their property in the protection of their livestock, but they don't necessarily want to be out at 2 o'clock in the morning when these hunts are occurring. And that resonated, I think, with those House and Senate members. There were two bills that addressed specifically addressed the composition of the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. One of those was sponsored by our good friend Representative Kent Peterson, and that bill sought to amend the eligibility for landowners if they currently statute says that you have to live on the land that you are farming or ranching. You can't even live on a ranchette that's a few miles away or in a town adjacent to where your land is located and operated. The bill, it was passed. I'm not sure if the governor has signed it yet, but if he hasn't, it's on the governor's desk. Fully anticipate that it will be signed. But that bill allows an individual who still has farming or ranching as their primary source of employment and income to be eligible to the Game, Fish, and Parks, to be serve on the Game, Fish, and Parks Commission if they don't live on that land. Many situations, in fact, I think all of you can probably attest to knowing friends or relatives when you think of the days past where generally those farmers and ranchers all lived on the land. But in this day, whether the kids have to drive to school or whether a spouse has employment in town, it's more practical for the farmer side of the family to drive out to the farm to take care of those farming operations. And I think Representative Peterson even described his own situation of his eligibility, despite the fact that he is certainly a full-time farmer and participant in the operation. But again, that bill passed, and if it hasn't been signed, I anticipate it would be signed by the governor. So in the course of that discussion, we had the legislative hearing in House Ag and Natural Resources Committee, and a couple of the representatives were reading over the other requirements within that statute, one of which lists where commissioners shall reside as far as geography in the state. It currently says three members shall live west of the Missouri River, and five members shall be East River. And a few of them felt like that was an inappropriate distribution of those positions, and that should be redivided to be four on each side of the river. That was a bill that governor's office did speak in opposition to. You know, it's kind of a the way it's set up right now, it's kind of a somewhat of a districting, if you will. I mean, a really gross attempt at districting, where you have most of our population, most of the licensed buyers residing on the east side of the river, felt like five would be more appropriate there and three west. The advocacy of those representatives was that, you know, the land base is the same and the many hunting opportunities in western South Dakota. And we did point out to them that, as long as I can remember anyway, when you look at the four of you that serve on this commission as landowners, two West River, two East River, it's been the way it's been for quite a while. The extra commissioners in the capacity that they serve here, east of the river, would be our non-landowners. So feel like the intent is there. It was a worthwhile discussion, and I think it's important to point out that we do have an even balance of landowner representation on our Game, Fish, and Parks Commission. That bill failed in committee. I don't remember the vote, but ultimately that bill was sent to the 41st day, which means it was deferred until after the session ends, which kills it. Again, Kevin, I'll let him speak to the four or five different bills that dealt with non-meandered waters. There are three bills still yet to receive action that we've been at least watching. We haven't testified either for or against any of those. Those three bills would first be Senate Bill 137, which should remove the minimum age for mentored hunts. Right now, mentored hunters have to be at least 10 years old. And the bill sponsored by Senator Jason Frerichs in the Senate and Representative Herman Otten in the House just had its hearing this morning in House chambers, and I believe it passed on a 10-2 or 11-2 vote, something like that. So that's going down to the House floor with a do-pass recommendation. We had another bill that dealt with preference points. The bill had its hearing in the House and passed the Senate yesterday on the consent calendar. That bill is pretty simple, straightforward. It grants the ability of a 10 or 11-year-old to purchase preference points. Something we had, you know, some mixed feelings on. I mean, there's a promising or there's an upside to it in allowing this to happen. The downside is it's additional competition for those that are seeking licenses right now and eligible right now. So it was one of those things that we, again, had mixed feelings on, but in the end stood silent on. But ultimately that bill passed. So come July 1st, 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds are going to be eligible to be able to purchase preference points for limited draw seasons. And then when they turn 12 and become eligible to use those, they'll have those preference points in their pockets and they'll have an advantage in drawing those licenses. The last bill I was going to mention actually relates to the non-meandered waters, but not directly, and that was House Bill 1140, which had a hearing this morning on House Bill 1140 would extend the same protections to public water that are currently in place for public land when it came to townships and counties vacating section lines. This, again, came out of a lot of that discussion with non-meandered waters, and it came out of Senate committee with a 6-3 vote, if I remember correctly, after a number of different votes and committee members switching sides and not quite knowing where that was going to end up. It did come out of committee, but it sounds like it's going to have a lot more discussion and potentially additional amendments put upon it when it gets down to the Senate floor. But once again, what it does is says that counties and townships may not vacate section lines that lead to water bodies that are greater than 40 acres in size. It's an expansion of the current statute that says no road that leads to public land can be vacated by a county or a township. Important here, I mean, counties and townships still have the ability to close roads if they're unsafe. There's separate provisions, and actually there's separate requirements in statute that dictate if a township or a county finds a road is not safe, not fit for travel, they have the ability to close that and place signs that close that section line to travel. In the case of a vacation, that's a situation where the section line is permanently closed and the property on either side of that section line reverts back to the private landowners on the adjacent properties next to the section line. I believe I jotted down a bunch of notes to, off a quick look at our spreadsheet. Secretary Hepler, any that I missed that you can think of? Okay. Any questions on any of those bills, Mr. Chairman or Commissioners?
Any questions or comments on the legislation? Maybe I'd give you one in regards to night vision hunting. Is it allowable to charge people to take them hunting at night like that? Is that a, is there anything that speaks to that or?
There's not. I don't believe that there would be any types of restrictions on any type of fees that could be charged for that.
Okay. Hunting. All right. Thank you. Sorry to blindfold you on the legislation thing, but it's forward right now. So,
and it was conspicuously absent now that I looked at the
agenda. Okay.
So glad to do it.
All right. Thank you, Tony. Kelly, do you have any other comments?
No, not till Kevin talks.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. With that, we'll move into the agenda. Agenda item number 2 is the approval of the minutes from the January meeting, as we did not.